Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Hello and good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It is Tuesday. And from what I'm told, it's the first day of spring. And I do have my blinker on and I'm trying to turn into the spring lane. But now we're getting snow around here. Hartford's looking to get about 10 to 16 inches of snow. That's in the forecast. That'd be the fourth big storm that they've had in 4 weeks. So you have my sympathy, Hartford friends, just so you know. I don't know what else is going around in the upper Midwest for weather because I haven't seen the reports, but we're going to get a dusting of snow here in the greater Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So spring, hold on just for a minute. I'm sure you'll get back to us in just a minute. All right, in Psalm 104, it says starting in verse 19, He made the moon to mark the seasons, and the sun knows when to go down. You bring darkness, it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. The lions roar for their prey and seek their food from God. The sun rises and they steal away and return and lie down in their dens. Then people go out to their work, to their labor until evening. So if that's what you're doing this morning, going out to your work and laboring until evening, we're just here to help you start that process. We're glad you're with us. It's 5 minutes after the hour. Rob Blue is going to be my first guest on the program this morning. Then we're going to talk to Dr. Everett Piper from Wesleyan College in Oklahoma. He's written a very interesting article that went quite viral. It got 3.5 million views in about 2 weeks. So we're going to have a discussion with him about safe spaces in college campuses around the country. He's quite vocal about that. But we'll take a short break and bring on our good friend Rob Louie in just a minute. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Rob Bluey is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal, my Washington, D.C. correspondent, boots on the ground. He's all of that and more. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. It's good to be with you again.
Thank you so much. Crazy what's going on in Austin, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, we're following it quite closely. Another incident last night, now at a plant, a processing plant. So, you know, it's one of those situations where I remember distinctly when we had the shooting happen in early 2000s here in the Washington, D.C. area with Lee Boyd, Malvo, and John Allen Muhammad were really terrorizing the area here, and people feared to even go outside because they never knew where they might confront this risk. And so I feel for the people of Austin, Texas, and we hope that they find the people who are behind these bombings.
Yeah, the tripwire idea feels very sinister. It's very creepy.
It certainly is, and it just shows that it's not they're trying new tactics. I think that one of the things that, you know, if you're a serial bomber, you know, they have to be prepared for anything. And this just demonstrates that it's not just packages left on a doorstep, but there now could be other things that the residents of Austin, Texas need to be aware of and cognizant that that might put them in danger.
Anybody speculating who this might be? What organization or what ideology or who is doing this?
You know, it's one of those things where we don't know. I mean, just like Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was doing this years ago and terrorizing people. I don't think that the law enforcement authorities have an idea yet. And certainly if they did, it would be easier to pinpoint. And I read this morning that, you know, it could be a single bomber. It could be a group that's working together here to do this. So it's unclear at this point, and I think that's one of the things that leads a lot of people to have a fear and perhaps just say, I'm going to stay inside today and not take the risk of going out there and encountering one of these bombs.
Mm-hmm. Rob, there was a report from Attorney General Sessions on Andrew McCabe, and the report said that he displayed a lack of candor. My mom used to call that lying.
Yes. Well, that is certainly the case. This is, we talk every week about how Russia and this investigation, Bob Mueller and everything else that's going on with Trump just won't go away. And here's another example where Andrew McCabe was just days away from retiring at 50 years old, retiring early from the FBI, and the Attorney General decided to step in and fire him. Obviously, the move was lauded by President Trump, who believed that McCabe displayed a bias and had an axe to grind. What is clear is the inspector general, there are inspector generals that work for all of the different cabinet agencies in government, and it is their job to do exactly what the title suggests, to inspect and to keep a watchful eye on how the government is operating. And in this case, Michael Horowitz, who is a distinguished official and takes his job seriously, was charged with looking into Andrew McCabe. And while we haven't seen the contents of the report, it's quite clear that they were disturbing based on how it's been described.
Mm-hmm. Rob, what did we learn from the special election in Pennsylvania besides a lot of people spent a lot of money?
A lot of people did spend a lot of money. Republicans spent probably more money than they really should have had to spend, given the district has voted in favor of President Trump by 20 points.
That's crazy.
It's weaker. The Democrat is stands ahead by several hundred votes. It also goes to show, I think, how divided our country continues to be. I mean, the fact that you have election after election where they come down to this close number. We talked in the past about how the Virginia race was decided by the flip of a coin or something of that nature. I mean, it just goes to show you that the people all across the country, whether it's Virginia or Pennsylvania or somewhere out west, remain divided about the two political parties. And at a time when I think you have the news media that clearly has a bias against President Trump, you have conservatives who in some cases are frustrated and angry by how that treatment, and you have Democrats who are just so energized. I mean, the passion and the energy on the part of the Democrats to drive this turnout to the polls has been amazing. We saw it in the Alabama Senate race, too. So, Bill, there's a lot of lessons to be learned here. I think that the most important one, if you're a Republican, though, it's that you probably should be taking a closer look at your congressional seat for November, because it's going to be a whole lot more competitive than it has been in the past.
Rob, hasn't mainstream media kind of shot themselves in their tasseled loafers with what they reported in the 2016 election? Because ever since they said there's a 97% chance Hillary Clinton's going to win. So when I read that Democrats have a double-digit lead in the midterms, I go, really? Do they?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right about that. I mean, poll after poll, and even going into Election Day, it was quite clear that the news media had already proclaimed Hillary Clinton the winner, only to see the results turn out differently. So when it comes to this generic ballot, which is what you're talking about, this is a measure not of any particular candidate, but just generally feelings of the voters. So would you rather see Democrats in control or Republicans in control? Well, Democrats also had a double-digit lead last year. What happened was Republicans passed tax reform. They cut the gap. I believe Republicans even retook the lead. So this is a snapshot in time, as all polls are, and we have a long time between now and Election Day. But again, I think it's another indication that when Republicans who control both the presidency and Congress are not legislating, and the news media is left to talking about Russia and other things, that their numbers go down. I think it's a clear sign that the voters want action. They want Republicans to do the job that they came to Washington to do. That means things like repealing Obamacare, reducing regulations, and not passing a massive spending bill as they seem destined to do later this week.
Well, one of the things that came out of the Pennsylvania election, the special election there, was it seems that there's Nancy Pelosi is not not making as many friends as she once did.
Yes. Well, Nancy Pelosi, that's another good lesson learned from this. The candidate, Connor Lamb, who was the Democrat, said he would not vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. Well, Nancy Pelosi has been a resilient force in the Democratic Party going all the way back to the George W. Bush administration. And I think that it's one of those situations where the Democrats realize that Nancy Pelosi drives a big turnout among Republicans. Republicans fear Nancy Pelosi and her being Speaker again. So they're more likely to come to the polls, and it might even keep some moderate Democrats home if they think that their candidate is supporting her. So it's one of those things where the Democrats are, you know, in this weird position where they have a potential female Speaker returning to the highest point in the House, and yet there are many candidates now who are taking a step back and saying, "Whoa, hold on, I don't think I can cast my vote in favor of Nancy Pelosi."
Yeah, Rob, I'm going to take a little break. I want to come back. I want to ask you a little bit about the health care premiums. I think Republicans, in order to control health care premiums, should probably set up a Go Defund Me campaign, something, because it's going to be a tricky one when it comes to election time. So I'm talking to Rob Bluey. He is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. It's 15 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. All right. We were not gone too long. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey. He's the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Rob, you know, there's a lot of states that are announcing gigantic rate hikes for their health insurance premiums on the Obamacare exchanges for 2018. That is not good, is it?
It's certainly not good. And I'll tell you what else, Bill. We're in a situation where this week it seems that Republicans, and we talked about this last week as well, are moving down a path where they could be trying to bail out Obamacare. I think one of the efforts that the Republicans don't want to confront is that heading to the polls, when voters head to the polls in November, they're experiencing and have on their mind these giant rate hikes. And who are they going to blame? They're probably going to blame the party in power.
Sure.
Because that's the same party that promised for 7 years to repeal Obamacare and hasn't been able to get it done now that they have a majority. So one of the things that my colleagues at the Heritage Foundation are trying to do is to rally some support, to return to focus on health care as an issue this year. Everybody seems to have the prevailing wisdom that this spending bill is the last must-pass piece of legislation this year. Well, it's only March. There's a lot of time left, and it would be really unfortunate, I think, if with these rate hikes going up, Republicans in Congress don't do something to address the health care situation.
President Trump said in a tweet, 3 Republicans and 48 Democrats let the American people down. As I said from the beginning, let Obamacare implode, then deal. Watch. So what does that mean?
Well, he's right that Obamacare has been gradually imploding over the course of the time since the law was enacted. I mean, you had many Democrats who didn't like portions of Obamacare and over the years have voted to partially repeal it. So the problem is, though, should we let the American people suffer and have to pay higher premiums and have less choice for their doctors as lawmakers in Washington try to figure out what the solution is? We think that there are conservatives for a long time have presented solutions that put the patient first, that try to do exactly what you're talking about, bringing down the costs and making health care and health insurance more based on the needs of the individual than, you know, the insurance companies. And I think that the challenge that you have is there are a lot of entrenched interests, special interests in Washington. And yes, it's exactly right. There were 48 Democrats and 3 Republicans and John McCain with that famous thumbs down. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason Republicans can't return to the issue and have a robust debate this year to try to fix Obamacare.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit, Rob, about a pro-life Democrat. Is there such a thing?
There is. There are few of them remaining. One of them is Daniel Lipinski. He's a Democrat out of Illinois, and he's facing a challenge to his political future because just like we've seen in many cases with moderate Democrats, the progressive left is coming after them, and they don't necessarily like the fat votes that they take on some of the social issues, particularly abortion, and he's certainly one of the last remaining few who exist. And this is the interesting situation we find ourselves in, because in 2006, when Democrats retook the House, you remember it was driven on the strength of the Blue Dog Democrats,
mm-hmm.
those moderate Democrats,
yes.
who are virtually all but extinct in today's Congress. So we shall see what this means, and maybe if there's any lessons that we can learn from the election in Illinois about what's to come in November when it comes to the Democratic Party picking far left candidates as opposed to centrists.
All right, Rob, there's a millennials conference coming up, and President Trump is going to address the millennials. What are the millennials most interested in hearing about?
Well, Bill, it's a big week for young people in Washington. Not only do we have the Millennials Conference taking place Thursday at the White House, the president is speaking. He'll be interviewed by Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA about free speech on college campuses, jobs. They're going to be talking about things like child care and some of those challenging decisions that young people make when they're trying to start a family. Starting tomorrow, we're having a teach-in at the Heritage Foundation that focuses on school safety, and this is in advance of the march that's taking place on Saturday, which is going to bring thousands, maybe up to a million young people to Washington, D.C. So I would say that there's no one issue that certainly unites millennials, but you'll certainly have a fair share and a big representation of them in Washington this week.
Mm-hmm. Rob, let's talk a little bit about the ongoing crisis that we have in our country with shootings that are going on, and they seem to continue. And it often seems that the shooters are fatherless, and that gets to be an ongoing concern in our country. Maybe you could talk to that.
Yes, my colleague Emily Gao did some research into this and found that, and a piece on the Daily Signal where you can learn more, found that 75% of the most notable mass shooters over the last few decades have come from fatherless homes, so single parent homes where they don't have the support that a father brings. And I think that it's one of the reasons where I don't think gun control is the only answer. That's all you seem to hear from the left, is that if you ban guns, that'll solve this challenge that we're confronting. And I think that it's a whole lot more complex than that. And family structure, and what we know is that when you have a two-parent family, it does so many great things for kids. Not only does it reduce poverty and bring more stability, but we're seeing the consequences of what happens when you don't have it. And it seems that in some cases, these young people just need that support of the father.
Mm-hmm. There's an organization. I'm going to have to try to find out what it is and get someone on the show. It's about the idea that we're just going to have a dad at the school every day. They can find dads that can volunteer on their day off. And the dad is just there. He might be fixing a door handle or walking through the hall or doing whatever. But whenever that program is in place, violence and disruption and everything else is down considerably just by the pure presence of a dad walking around the school. I find that to be a fascinating idea.
That certainly is, and I'd encourage your listeners to go to our website, heritage.org. They can see some great resources we've compiled on this issue that address exactly what you're talking about. And there are some great case studies of programs like the one you described that really do seem to work. I know the Woodson Center has one where they were successful in Milwaukee schools with some of the steps that they took on a proactive basis. So there are solutions out there that show that you can reduce violence, and it's not all just about mass shootings. There's a lot of other violence that takes place in schools, and I think we need to work together and find some common ground to start to address this.
So when students are walking out and they're wanting to decide on how gun legislation is going to go on in our country, and they're not even old enough to buy a gun, and then it gets walkouts as young as five-year-olds, a little out of control?
I never want to judge somebody else's free speech, right, or their right to petition the government. I do think that in many cases, there should be at a certain age you have to raise questions as to how much they understand current events and know what's going on. So I completely agree with that sentiment. But I also think that it's really encouraging to see so much activism on this issue. And what I hope is, and I realize this is just a hope, and maybe I'm naive, I really hope that the people who are protesting this will want to come to the table and hear about all of the solutions. Because as we just talked about, it's not all about banning guns. Mm-hmm. There really are so many other issues that I think students who are now engaged and want to put an end to mass shootings let's try to solve this problem together. And if they're willing to do that, I think it'll be more productive. They'll have more success legislatively in what they're trying to accomplish. And yeah, we look forward to engaging with them when they're in Washington, D.C. this Saturday. We'll certainly be out there covering it for the Daily Signal.
Indeed. Rob, you are so not naive. I've cornered the market on naive, so just so you know. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Always look forward to our conversations. Yep, talk to you next week. It is 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, Dr. Everett Piper at about 20 minutes to the hour. We're going to talk about that very thing, about safe spaces and student demonstrations. Be back in a minute. Good morning. 30 minutes after the hour and the first day of spring. We'll see what happens today, because I think there's going to be snow around the upper Midwest, so we'll find out just how spring-like it's going to be. But we know it's on the way for sure. We're going to take a little break for news, then Dr. Everett Piper is going to be joining us. Very much looking forward to speaking to him again. He's the president of Wesleyan Oklahoma College. Did I say that right, Rebecca? I think I did. Oklahoma Wesleyan University. There we go. Be back in a minute.
God loves you is one thing, but bring up God's judgment, whoa, and the party's over. This is Jim Garlow, and I'm talking here about Christian friends and family. There's no doubt about God's love, 1 John 4:16. It says it's so. A large part of my master's thesis was on the word agape, which means, of course, God's love. And a word from the Old Testament, the word hesed, which means God's love. Admittedly, the Bible is filled with God's love. But the Bible also speaks much about judgment. God is a God of justice. Oh, I know, it's not as cool to talk about that because we've switched it around. Instead of God making us in His image, we've remade God in our image. Love is so much easier to speak of, isn't it? But you can't avoid it. God's love and His judgment are in the book, like it or not. This is Jim Garlow. Be prepared to live out your faith.
Good morning. 25 minutes until the very top of the hour. All right. Last week, there was an interesting story that broke. A student named Lake Engel, and he's a student at the Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Doesn't that just sound confusing right from the start? Like, we'll have to try to, there'll be a quiz on this, by the way. It's like Hawaii of Ohio. It's like, hey, I'm going to school in Hawaii. No, you're not. You're going to school in Dayton, Ohio. Very confusing. But anyway, here to sort all this out is Dr. Everett Piper. He's the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. And the student was banned from class by his liberal professor for his disrespectful views. He had a list of disrespectful views. And here to discuss it is Dr. Everett Piper. Good morning, Dr. Piper.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Thank you so much for coming back on. This is a crazy story. Would you tell our listeners exactly what happened to Lake?
In a nutshell, Lake Engel is a senior at this university you just described. He's majoring in religious studies, quote unquote, at a state campus. One of the required courses to graduate within his major is titled Christianity 481. In that class, the professor started advocating for and describing the multiple genders and gender fluidity argument. Lake Engel raised his hand and said, "Excuse me, I think there are only two genders, male and female, and almost all biologists would agree with me." As a result, the professor kicked him out of class, not only for that one session, but for the entire semester. So now he's in a predicament. Will he even be able to graduate because he's prohibited from taking a class that's required of him simply because he suggested that he's pro-science and believes that there are two genders, male and female, and the professor didn't like it? Sidebar, I actually went public and posted on Twitter a day or so later that Oklahoma Wesleyan University is offering Lake Engel tuition free to take our equivalent of Christianity 481 at our university, where we still believe in biology and we still teach Christian orthodoxy.
And this position taken by this liberal professor is pretty prevalent at schools all across the U.S.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I covered in my book, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. I talk about the slippery slide, and it's not even a slippery slide any longer. We're careening off a cliff of lunacy, where the ivory tower, the college and university, the pinnacle of Western civilization, if you will, no longer even tolerates a discussion about the objective empirical facts of the male and female. The professors, by and large, from Brown to Berkeley and everybody in between, are actually penalizing students who want to raise their hand and say, I actually think a female is a biological fact and not a fabrication or a fantasy of a dysphoric male. If you were to express that as a student, or if I were to express that as a student, we would be told, we can't tolerate your intolerance and we hate you hateful people. The response is self-refuting. It makes no sense. It's literally nonsense. They're cutting off the branch upon which they sit. It would be funny, like watching a dog chase its tail, if it weren't so sad. But that is the nature of the beast right now in terms of higher education.
Mm-hmm. And just what is the state of free speech on college campuses today, Dr. Piper?
I would argue it doesn't exist.
Okay.
Rather than having academic freedom, we've got ideological fascism. Now, what mm-hmm. do I mean by that? A fascist is a Roman bundle of sticks. That's, and it's from that we get the word fascism.
Mm-hmm.
A fascist was a Roman bundle of sticks bound together so tightly you couldn't break it. Fascism is commonality. You have to be one of us. You have to be part of us. You have to look like us and think like us and be like us. Otherwise, we will crush you. We will break you. And don't you see that in this particular story? If you don't agree with me, if you don't comply with what's politically correct, we will expel you from the class. Your view is verboten. How in the world can anybody with a straight face claim that that's intellectual freedom? It's ideological fascism, pure and simple.
Mm. You know, and you're paying up to $60,000 per year for some of these courses, and then you're told by these liberal professors that there are, you know, 64 genders, and if you disagree with them, you are not only expelled, but you're practically exiled from society.
Absolutely. And these people, I'm repeating myself in some degree here, but these people, these academic elites, my industry embarrasses itself right now by actually peddling this pablum. We actually want to tell people that if you don't agree with this new construct, this new idea that has no scientific basis whatsoever, show me any scientific basis that proves empirically that there's more gender, that there's more genders than two, that the male and female isn't biological fact. Show me anything that disproves that. You can't. But what they're arguing right now is under the guise of science, under the guise of tolerance, they wave their rainbow flag of tolerance and love while showing hate towards anybody that they can't tolerate. Again, I said it once before, I'll say it again. It's self-refuting.
Mm.
They actually are denying the premise upon which they want to make their argument by continuing to open their mouth. And we need to have the courage and the confidence to call them out on this.
Yeah, Dr. Piper, it was funny. I saw an ad for a T-shirt, and the T-shirt said, there is not just two genders. So if you wanted to buy a T-shirt, you go to the menu and you scroll down, and it gives you two choices, male or female.
Incredible. Isn't that? You just summarized it. Because it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. What are the options? Yeah.
Well, and here's another way to look at it. How can you be a feminist and deny the biological fact of the female? You can't be a feminist if you deny the feminine. So the whole feminist agenda implodes upon itself if we start denying that females are a fact.
Yeah. So I'm curious as to what do we do? How do we start fighting this?
Well, I think it's time for us to I spoke at an event out in Nashville, the National Religious Broadcasters Association, recently, and I said, I'm tired of the word conversation. We need to stop the conversation because that implies capitulation. It implies compromise. It implies that there's moral neutrality and intellectual neutrality. Well, we're not going to have a conversation about ISIS. We're not going to have a conversation about antebellum slavery. We're not going to have a conversation about these other evils that are objectively wrong. So why are we having a conversation about other things that are objectively false? We need to run into the face of the storm with confidence and courage and clarity, I would argue, because our culture is begging for it. They want somebody to call a spade and to help them understand what's up, what's down, what's right, what's wrong, what's evil, what's good, what's bitter, what's sweet. Isn't it the prophet Isaiah that says, woe unto him who calls evil good and good evil, bitter sweet and sweet bitter. Woe unto him who reverses definitions and has a conversation about those things rather than bringing clarity to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems that we should start with saying, well, I just reject the premise, because your idea about the conversation is, let's back up and go, no, I just reject the premise.
Spot on. I was interviewed by the Daily Beast, and you might ask, well, why did you even grant the interview? But I was interviewed by the Daily Beast recently, and I'm sure when the article comes out, they'll excoriate me. They kept asking me, do you deny LGBT students their rights on your campus? And I said, I reject your premise, because we don't label people that way at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. We don't dumb down the definition of a human being to nothing but the sum total of what they're inclined to do. We're the Imago Dei, the image of God. We're not the Imago Dog. We're made in the image of God and have moral culpability and freedom of choice. We're not made in the image of an animal that just has to run around and be defined by his desires. I reject your premise.
I love it. Dr. Piper, let me take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Everett Piper, the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I have on our studio line Dr. Everett Piper, president of Wesleyan Oklahoma College and University, I should say. And Dr. Piper, I want to go back to this Lake Engle. Apparently, he has been allowed to return to his class as of about 10 hours ago. That was in the news. So he is going to return. What do you think his consequences might be back on campus?
My guess is, and I haven't read that story, so you're giving me news I was unaware of, that 10 hours ago he was actually readmitted. It seems clear, based on what you just said, that the university has admitted that it was wrong, that they were demonstrating intolerance by expressing their intolerance of his intolerance, and that they know they're in a legal quagmire if they don't admit this kid and let him back and finish his course. Now, if he doesn't pass his tests and everything, that's one thing. You can dismiss a kid or give a kid a poor grade for not studying and not doing his academic work, but you can't legally, I would argue, and apparently they agree, dismiss a kid simply for raising his hand and saying, I believe that a male is an empirical fact and a female is an empirical fact, and I disagree with this politically correct construct of 64 genders. It's nonsense. So they apparently are admitting that, at least legally. I doubt they're admitting it academically or in terms of where their paradigm as an institution is.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious as to what your email inbox is like nowadays.
Well, you know, I'll answer it positively.
All
I
right.
Get my share of hate mail, but I get reams and reams of notes and texts and Twitters and even hard copy letters from people who say, thank you for speaking up. In fact, I'll give you this poster child. I received a letter from the University of Central Florida, Department of Psychology letterhead, and it basically said this: Dear Dr. Piper, I read your Not a Daycare piece, period. I went to your website to try to figure out who you are, period. As an atheist, I can easily dismiss both your religion and your politics, and I do, period. And then he concluded by saying this: but on this issue, thank you, kudos. It needed to be said. Please carry on. Sincerely yours, Fulbright scholar, Joe Smith, whatever his name was,
yeah.
University of Central Florida. So even the atheist recognizes that we need some sanity and clarity in our culture, and they're saying thank you.
Mm. So let's talk about your book, This Is Not a Daycare, and let's talk about some of the occasions that have come on college campuses where they have examples of the snowflake insanity that you call it.
Well, Lake Engle is an example of it. It's snowflake insanity, but the snowflake in this particular case isn't the student, but the professor.
Mm-hmm.
So the professor was offended by an idea and demanded that the idea be silenced, that she couldn't tolerate the microaggression of Lake Engle. Well, this is prevailing across the campus from Berkeley to Brown to Wyoming to Emory, everybody in between, students don't like an idea, and it's usually a conservative idea, and it doesn't even have to necessarily be a Christian idea. For example, Ben Shapiro, a conservative Jew, he's being protested out in your neck of the woods because of what? He has a contrary idea. His idea is unpopular. So what do? Rather than debating him and having a good, robust, civil exchange of ideas where somebody wins and somebody loses, they silence him. They make him verboten. They actually say he's guilty of microaggressions, but they deserve a trigger warning before he's allowed on campus, and they won't even hear him out. They silence and protest rather than engage in good education. That is the nature of the academy today, and my book calls that out and says, my land, we're supposed to be a university. We're not supposed to coddle these students and treat them as if they're going to school in a daycare.
Yeah, Dr. Piper, it seems like free speech was born at Berkeley, and it seems to be the place where it also went to die.
I wrote an article on that a few months ago, and I said free speech was not born on the beaches of Berkeley, per se.
Mm-hmm.
Free speech was born in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago.
Amen.
Because in the words of Jesus, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, that used to be emblazoned in almost every library header across the Western world. And in fact, even to this day at Oxford, an institution that is the cradle of the liberal arts, if you will, their motto is Veritas, Latin for truth, and then grounded in those words of Christ, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So you're absolutely right. Berkeley is proving it's not the birthplace of free speech that Bethlehem is.
Yeah. All right. What about parents and just concerned people that want to defend our country against this insanity? What can we do? I guess I'm back to that question because I want to know what I can do.
Well, this is so important. It's maybe the best question of the hour. Parents need to understand that ideas have consequences, and good ideas are going to raise up good kids, and bad ideas are going to raise up bad kids and bad culture and bad church and bad community. And what you see right now in the news is the result of bad ideas. So why in the world do you continue to spend 18 years of your life training up your child in the way he should go and then send him off to an institution that in the first 18 minutes starts teaching bad ideas and revels in tearing his heart, mind, and soul out? Why do you spend $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on the barrelhead to send your kids off to these institutions that teach this pabulum? Parents need to start taking this seriously and recognize that 70% of your kids that have been churched, raised up the right way, are going to lose their faith and walk away from it by their junior year in college. Do you want to roll the dice? Do you want to play those odds? Or are you going to pay for a good education that actually teaches the truth that you hold dear rather than disparages them?
Wow, that's important stuff. Really is encouraging to hear your fight. I love the fact that you have taken this on to whatever degree God has prompted you to do, but you've been a real inspiration to all of us. So thank you for that work. It's a big deal, Dr. Piper. Thank you.
Well, let me quote Jim Garlow, who I think you have on your show periodically.
Yes, we do.
In the face of many of these battles, I called him up once and thought and thanked him for his leadership. And his closing remark to me in that phone call was, "Everett, what a wonderful time to be alive. What a wonderful time to fight the good fight for such a time as this. What a wonderful time to be alive." And Garlow is spot on.
Yeah. I mean, just the whole gender issue creates so much idiotic confusion. I mean, I found out the other day that men are paid a lot less than women to be a surrogate mother. I hate inequality. I hate it.
Oh, and you know, at the end of the day, it's misogynistic, because what is more anti-woman than to deny her
bathroom,
her privacy, her shower, her sport,
I agree.
Her power, to give all of those over to a dysphoric male that wants to take it away?
And then the athletes and the transgender athletes come in and they start taking all the titles away from women, and they start getting the scholarships because they're better athletes than most of the women.
And people might be saying, "Oh, that'll never happen." It is happening.
It is happening.
It's happening as we speak. You probably covered the news on these stories.
I did.
Women's athletics. If we continue down this path, women's athletics is dead. It no longer exists.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much for responding yes and saying you'll come on, because it's really an honor to speak to you. So thank you very much.
Anytime. Blessings to you.
Thanks, Dr. Piper. That's Dr. Everett Piper, the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. What a great conversation. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's 5 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be back in a minute.
Great is your love and justice, God of Jacob.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Network. We've been broadcasting relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching for nearly 70 years, and we are still committed today to leading people to Christ and nurturing believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. We are a listener-supported ministry. Your gifts make this ministry possible, so thank you for your generous donations. Together, we can spread the hope of Jesus to the world. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.
A special thanks to Dr. Everett Piper and to Rob Bluey. My guests in the first hour, spectacular. So good. Appreciate them very much. Coming up in the next hour, Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We're going to start talking a little bit about the opioid addiction. And incidentally, opioids have no pain-relieving advantage in a year-long clinical trial. We're going to talk about that as well. And President Trump says he's going to get very tough on drugs. And he was speaking in New Hampshire yesterday. He called for the death penalty for some drug dealers, explaining his new strategy to combat opioids. He noted that many families are dealing with terrible hardships because of opioid abuse. And he promised that the scourge of drug addiction in America will stop. So that's words from the president. Sounds pretty intense. But David Stevens is going to join us. And then in the next hour as well, Pastor John Somerville, we're starting to talk about preparing our hearts for Easter and the servant leadership of Jesus and the amazing celebration of Easter coming up, the death and resurrection of Christ. So that's all ahead in hour two. Thanks for joining me this morning. It is a couple minutes until the top of the hour. If you have to be at work in 2 minutes, better get going. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.